This podcast is part of the Podcast Arcade Network.
Hello and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. Thank you for listening. It means a lot to me that you take the time out of your day to hear what I have to say. I'm going to try something new and definitely out of my comfort zone today, so bear with me. Typically when I do an episode, I have everything typed out, written word for word. Pretty much the episode, when it's a solo episode, I should say, it's scripted. But today I'm just going to do a basic outline, not a lot of details. I'll try to remember as many things as I can. That's the good thing about having the script, is you usually don't forget what you're trying to say. Because how many times have you been in a situation where you were talking to somebody, you left, and then you think to yourself, oh, I should have said dot, dot, dot. Well, that may happen. So if I do forget something in the episode, I'm sorry, because I don't have it scripted. But I want to try it out and just see if it sounds a little more natural, sounds a little more conversational rather than scripted. We'll see how it goes. You can shoot me an email or find me on social media and let me know. Was it good? Did it stink? Whatever. Speaking of email, I got an email from a listener and I will be reading this. It says, I wanted to just say thank you for your work on the podcast. The sound is good and I think you have a talent for hosting. I've been telling my friends about your podcast, but sadly, they aren't really podcast listeners. So it's been an uphill battle. Thanks for your time that you put in. Ander. Thank you, Andrew. I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me when I get emails from listeners. It puts a lot of gas in my tank and lets me know that, hey, I'm not just talking to the microphone and nobody's listening. When I get feedback, I really, really appreciate it. So if you have feedback like Anders, send it my way. I really appreciate it. I'll read it on the show. Even if it's a criticism, I may or may not read it on the show, but let me know. If there's ideas and topics that you want to talk about, hit me up. Today is going to be different. Like I said, it's kind of like my daughter several years ago got one of those instant cameras. It wasn't a Polaroid, but it's like a Polaroid where you take a picture and it prints out the picture. Those came out, I think, in the late 70s, if I remember correctly. They started to taper off, I think, by the late 80s and definitely weren't around by the late 90s, especially when digital cameras came into effect or into popularity. But they had a resurgence here, I'd say probably 5-6 years ago they started coming back. She loved it. She thought it was something totally neat and cool. And I was thinking to myself, this is something from the 80s. This is not new. But the thing is, it was different. People take pictures with their cameras, take pictures with their phones. And very, very rarely do they ever print them out. They just post them on social media. So for her, it was something totally different. Wow, physical photo. Who would have thought? So today's episode is going to be like that. It's not necessarily new, but it's going to be a little bit different. The first book I want to talk about, though, is Crime and Puzzlement. Again, blast from the past. I got this back in the early 80s. I think it was 1984. For those of you that don't know, I grew up on a farm out in southwest Nebraska in the country. So we didn't have access to a lot of stores in general. Even if we did go, it was only once a week to get groceries for the week and then drive back home. So I didn't get a chance to look around at stores. Even the few that we had anyway didn't have a whole lot to offer. So we took a trip to Florida. We went to the mall because, hey, that's what you did in the 80s. And I think I found this book at Walden Books or some sort of bookstore. I'm not sure. But it was called Crime and Puzzlement 2. It was first published in 1982. And the first one was published in 1981. But I bought the second one. I was really into detective stuff. Me and a friend from school, in fact, were really into trying to be detectives. We would try to learn how to pick locks and write codes and solve mysteries. I guess must have been all the 80s TV shows that we were watching about detectives. So we were really fascinated by it. So what this book is it has on the left side of the page, It has a picture and it has all your characters in there that you're trying to solve this mystery of. And then on the right side at the top, it has 3-4 paragraphs describing what's in the picture, a little bit of background on the mystery. And then below that, it has several questions to help you solve the mystery. So there's usually 8 to maybe 10 questions at the most. And basically the last one is who murdered this suspect or who stole the money? So you have different pictures in there that you're trying to look at and solve the mystery. It's kind of a Where's Waldo? You look at the curtains. You look at the rug. Are there shoe prints on the rug? One of them, for example, is there's this suspect dead on the floor at the bottom of the stairs. The murderer said, oh, well, they fell down the stairs. But if you notice, in the left hand of the dead person is a glass. So if you notice in the picture, the railing going up and down the stairs is on the left side as well. So how could you be holding a glass and go down the stairs at the same time? Obviously, she put the glass there later after he had died. So anyway, great book. I highly recommend it. He's got Lawrence Treat is the author, and he did, I think, 5 or 6 of these. You can still get them on Amazon. They're only, I think I got mine, the first one I got 5-6 years ago for $8 plus shipping. So it's not very expensive. If you like mysteries, definitely check them out. Sticking with the mystery theme, I got these books. I didn't get these books. Actually, I checked these out at the library when I was a kid. They're from the Usborne Detective Guide series. There's 4 of them. And again, I got these checked out back in the early 80s. I think I happened to find them at our library. These are fun little books, especially if you're an 8, 9, 10-year-old kid. Basically, what they're doing is helping you become a detective. So they show you different scenarios, different pictures on how to make your own flip book to find suspects. You know how you flip and change their eye color or give them a mustache. They show you how to try to dust for fingerprints. They give you, again, like the crime and puzzlement book, they give you these pictures and you try to solve how the criminal broke into the jewelry store or how a criminal's hideout would be placed. And one of the coolest things in here, though, I have to mention, I'll try to get a picture of it in the show notes, is how to set up your detective office. So again, me and my friend thought we were going to be a detective. We were going to be detectives when we grew up, I guess. And they have this cool office with talcum powder on the mat in front of the door so that if a criminal walks into your office, you can see what their footprint looks like. They have a little cassette recorder and a microphone set up so you can secretly tape record the discussion. They have a mirror above the door so you can look out the window behind you in case a criminal tries to sneak up behind you in the window. You even have an alarm button under your desk. And so it just looks so fun. Again, to an 8, 9-year-old kid, this is fun. They show how to find crooks that might have a habit. If they whistle, if they drum their fingers, if they crack their knuckles, even if they have a disguise, you can still look at these traits and find the criminals. So it's just a fun book. If you have kids, I would recommend this, even though it is fairly dated. It was just so fun to check these books out over and over again. I think even at one point, the librarian told me, he said, you've checked these books out 4 times already. Why don't you check something else out? I said, I just loved looking at these pictures just because they're so colorful and fun. They even have consistent characters coming through here. Detective Dodds and Detective Hopper, I think, are the two detectives, and the different stories that they go through, and you try to help these two detectives solve these mysteries. So it's a fun book written by Anne Savardi, and the first ones were published in 1979. So these are definitely old, but still good. Switching gears a little bit, I wanted to mention I went to Mile High Comics in Denver. It is the largest comic book store, I think, in the world at 45,000 square feet. It's in an old warehouse. And I went there years and years ago, 1991, in fact, but they had, I think, 3 stores at that time. And they consolidated all 3 stores down into 1 mega store. And it was the 50th anniversary. So my brother and I went there. It was really fun just to see the vastness of this store. It's almost overwhelming, actually. So they have rows of long boxes that you can search through. They have a whole separate trade paperback section with, again, rows of trade paperbacks. They also have gaming tables. They have a stage. And then behind all of this is just their back catalog. Literally, I'm not joking here, floor to ceiling of long boxes and trade paperbacks. As I couldn't even see the other wall. I mean, they kind of had it walled off a little bit anyway, so it was tough to see, but just gigantic. And then they have another section of just graded key issue comics. Again, long boxes just full of key issues. Some like X-Men number 200 or Spider-Man number 250. Anyway, these key valuable issues that they all have graded. Some of them are not graded, but some of them are. But just vast amount of comics, trade paperbacks. It's just insane. Anything and everything you can think of, they have it. So if you haven't been to Mile High Comics in Denver, if you're ever in town and you love comic books, even if you don't buy anything, it's worth just going in and checking it out. And like I said, it's the 50th anniversary and the owner is still there. But speaking of comic book stores, Rainbow Comics and Cards, hit up Taylor and Tim here in Lincoln. You can go to Rainbow Comics on the internet, check out the website. I'll put a link in the show notes and visit one of the two stores. The great, great store. Tim and Taylor will definitely help you out and hook you up with whatever you're looking for. Also wanted to do a Middle Earth Minute. Now this one's going to be a little tough again, so I apologize for those Tolkien fans out there. I might totally flub up something, but anyway, I'm going to be talking about the Numenoreans. The Numenoreans were that race of men. If you remember in the movie, Aragorn was a Numenorean. They had a long life and they got their start after the downfall of Morgoth, Sauron's master. Sauron fled, but the gods, the Valar is what they're called, rewarded the men, a group of men, for helping in the defeat of Sauron and Morgoth and gave him this island. First king of the Numenoreans was Elros, and he had a brother named Elrond, as we know from the movies. They were half-elven, so they could pick either the immortality of the elves or the mortality of the men. So Elros chose to be one of the men, but also the land that they got from the Valar, they also gave them long life. As we know in the movie, Aragorn was 76, 78, I think, if I remember correctly. So they gave these men, the Numenoreans, extended life. They typically lived around 400 years of age, sometimes a little longer. Later on, they didn't live quite as long, but we'll get that into later. Started on this island really good. They loved the Valar and the gods and everything good. But slowly but surely, they started to decline. They wanted not only a long life, they wanted immortality like the elves and became jealous of the elves and wanted immortality. They were told that they could never visit the West. If you remember in the movies, at the end, Bilbo and Frodo and Gandalf and some of the others went on a ship and went to the West. They went to this place called the Undying Land. The deal that the Valar made with the Numenoreans was that you can have long life, but you can never go to the Undying Land. Well, later on, generations later, thousands of years later, in fact, they said, no, we're not going to be banned from that. They call it the ban. We're actually going to go to the Undying Land anyway. And so Sauron shows up on the scene later on. The Numenoreans got extremely wealthy and very arrogant. And that's why they decided to say, you know what? We're going to the Undying Land anyway. We don't care. We're better. We know better. And Sauron helped feed that. In fact, he came to the island as a prisoner and faked being captured by one of the Numenorean kings. And that's where all this got started. And the Valar said, we're not having any of that. As soon as one of the kings went to the Undying Land, he destroyed the army and sunk the island. And so basically this is Tolkien's version of Atlantis. But as we know, some of Aragorn's relatives, Isildur, if you remember, he was from Numenor, they left the island before it sank and established colonies in Middle-earth, and there's where we get Gondor. Fascinating, fascinating story. I definitely don't do it justice, but the whole story has a lot of intrigue. And you can find a detailed story of this in the Silmarillion towards the back. It's called the Akalabeth, and it's only about 30 pages long and goes into much more detail of the capturing of Sauron and the deception he gives the king and how he moves the Numenoreans down that dark, dark path to the point that they start doing human sacrifices as well. Then there's another book called The Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth. Has even more little short stories about the different kings of Numenor and how they had shifted over the years and started getting more evil. Also in The Return of the King, if you remember, there's those appendixes in the back. There's one in there called Appendix B that gives you an outline, a timeline, excuse me, of the Second Age, which is when this whole Numenorean timeline took place. And it gives an outline of the Second Age and talks about how they started and how you can see there that they slowly disintegrated down to basically evil. So you get little tidbits of the Numenoreans even in the Lord of the Rings books. The Akalabeth and the unfinished tales of Numenor and Middle-earth just gives you more detail. One of the quotes from the Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth is this: they turn their play into great matters and great matters into play. I thought that was just a fun quote from the book. And that one, the Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth, is written by Tolkien, but edited by his son, just like the Silmarillion, Christopher Tolkien. So what Christopher Tolkien did in a nutshell is take little stories that his dad wrote but never finished and kind of put them together in a more cohesive manner. Not the best, as you know by the Silmarillion, it is very disjointed, but that's the best he could do. So he might find a couple paragraphs about the Numenorean kings over here, and he finds another 2, 3, 4 pages about the Numenoreans over here and put them all into one book. And that's what he did. Definitely check out the Akalabeth in the back of the Silmarillion, or Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth are both good. And the Akalabeth is very short, so you can probably sit down and read those 30 pages very quickly. And it's just a fun read. But I'm also a Tolkien nerd, so take that with a grain of salt. Well, that's all I have today. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it. Go to covertnerd.net to find other episodes. On any of the podcast catchers that you have, I'll have links to the show notes in there. You can subscribe pretty much anywhere. Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, pretty much everywhere. And again, if you have a suggestion for the show or comments, you can shoot me an email. I'll have all my contact information at the covertnerd.net website. Again, thank you for listening. And until next time, nerd it up.